and filmmakers of Kirkland. Dunkirk. Let's start with Jack Bowden. Come on in, Jack, and let's applause. I saw Jack at breakfast today. Did you have some breakfast with me today? I was sitting kind of, I pretend like I was sitting with you.
Oh, really?
And here we have Barry Keoghan. Harry Styles. Come this way, please. Here we go, Harry. Good to see you. And of course, we also have Emma Thomas. And that rounds out the cast and filmmakers for Dunkirk. And to start things off, let's start off with Christopher Nolan. I feel like in many ways, Mr. Nolan, you're like a new filmmaker making your first real live story on the big screen. What attracted you to Dunkirk?
Well, like most British people, Dunkirk's a story that I've grown up with. I don't even remember the first time I was told about the events at Dunkirk. So, as kids, we received a sort of very simplified, almost mythic, fairy tale version of what happened there. But over time, and in particular experience that Emma and I had about 20 years ago, where we made the crossing with a friend of ours who owned a small boat, and we made the crossing at about the same time of the year the evacuation had taken place, and went to Dunkirk. And the crossing was extremely difficult. The channel was very rough. It felt difficult and dangerous, and that was without people dropping bombs on us. That was without heading into a war zone. And so I came away from that experience with my respect and fascination for the people who take part in the real evacuation, absolutely cemented. So it's just something that I've never quite understood why a modern film hasn't been made about it. And as a filmmaker, those are the kind of gaps that you're looking to fill.
Okay, let's kick it off with the press. We'll start right over here.
Ron? Wow, the movie was amazing in IMAX. It was so awesome. My question is for Christopher Nolan. We've seen your career grow. Independent filmmaker kicking butt back then, now this epic war film you've created. Can you talk a little bit about the process moving forward in your career, how you choose your projects, how you know you guys as a team choose your projects and what you direct?
I mean, for me, it's always been about story. It's always been about finding a story that hooks me, that I feel that I can have an emotional connection with, that'll sustain me through the years of making the film. I'm very single-minded. I only really do one thing at a time. I'm not very good at planning what I'm going to do next. So I dive in and I concentrate on one film for, you know, 2 or 3 years usually. So it has to be a story that I feel is going to hook me emotionally for that period of time and keep me enthusiastic about it.
Emma, where do you fall into place with all this?
I guess I produce the films that he gets enthusiastic about. I mean, you know, we only really work together, and so, I mean, you know, I try and suggest things to him. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, it really has to be a film that Chris is excited about and sees something that he can do that's different and, you know, he can get behind.
Right over here.
I'm very curious about about your editing process. How long was your first cut on this compared to the finished film? And also, you haven't really released deleted scenes from your previous films. Have you pulled like a Kubrick where everything has been burned? Or do you have them in a vault somewhere where one day they might see the light of day?
I know, they're all in the films. I mean, I have a great editor, Lee Smith, and we find a way to just stuff more and more into the sausage. So we don't really tend to leave anything on the cutting room floor. In terms of complete scenes that would be coherent on a deleted scenes feature. If you look back at my past, like Insomnia, we have two deleted scenes on the DVD there because we have two scenes that I like very much that had to come out of the film for time. And after that, I really took a view of trying to make those decisions on the page. So being a writer-director, I don't come to the floor with things that... Well, let me put it this way. Making films is hard. All of these people here can attest to that. It's just difficult. And you'll do anything to not shoot something if you don't have to. So I try and pull things out at script stage that I don't think are going to serve the narrative.
Right here?
I thought it was an interesting choice to have the three different stories going on, one by land, one by air, and one by sea. And I was wondering what inspired that choice and what you were hoping to gain from those perspectives.
What I was hoping to gain was a way of maintaining a subjective storytelling approach, but still building up a coherent picture of the larger events of Dunkirk. So everything in the film is intended to be intense, suspenseful, and subjective. You want to be on the beach with these guys seeing events through their points of view. But then you also want to build up this bigger picture. So that requires view from the air, from a Spitfire pilot, on the sea, from people coming over to help with the evacuation. And that way, not let the audience step out of the movie, step out of the human scale perspective. I didn't want to cut to generals in rooms with maps, kind of pushing things around, whatever. I didn't want to give the audience knowledge that the characters didn't have, other than through the interaction of these three distinct story threads.
I want all the actors to answer this question. Given the fact that there wasn't a lot of dialogue in this movie, what does a Christopher Nolan script even look like? Harry Styles, let's start with you.
I think the thing with Chris's script is the same across a lot of his older movies, that they lend themselves to multiple viewings, and I feel like you learn new things each time you watch it, and I feel like it's very much the same I felt when reading the script, is you kind of learnt new things and found new things that you were excited about within it. I think that's kind of, once you get your head around it, because they're obviously so technical, you kind of enjoy it more and more the more times you read it, which is obviously amazing.
Ben?
I think that the fact that there wasn't much dialogue in the script meant that a lot of the characterization was left to us, which is quite an amazing thing to have. It just meant that we got to work on it ourselves, I guess, and when we stepped onto set, you had to kind of know your character so that you can respond to the situations around you accordingly. So.
Mark?
It's always helpful not to have to try and convince an audience that a bit of exposition is something that you really need to say as a character. Even in Shakespeare plays, you get exposition sometimes, and you have to work hard and twist and turn to make it sound like it's something you need to say to someone else to change them or to change yourself. And there was none of that in the script. Everything had it was easy to see the need behind the words and behind the situation, so that's a delight. It's also a delight, as I imagine it was, to work with Kurosawa, to have the same person who's made the script directing the film, if they can do both things, which Chris can, because it gives him a flexibility when you're filming a scene. He knows the material well enough that if an idea comes up when you're filming something, he'll know whether it's a valuable idea or not. And always things happen in front of the camera that are not prepared for. So you want to have someone in charge who's strong and knows what they want to do, but it's flexible about what's happening in the present moment.
I mean, when I read the script, I've heard the planes above, like, you know, that scene was above my head. And as for dialogue, like, the good filmmakers, they don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be a lot of dialogue. You can get the message across in little dialogue, you know, the good ones can do that. So, yeah.
Jeff?
It's a very, like, lean script. It's very fit. Like, there's not a lot of fat in the script, and I think that's what makes it a great script. And me, personally, I enjoyed the majority of my dialogue was technical jargon. I really like, there's a great satisfaction when you have to learn technical jargon for a part. And, you know, in the military, they love shorthand. And it's just a personal satisfaction in knowing what certain things meant. And, you know, and yeah, it was fun.
Do you remember any of it?
Vector 1-2, I certainly remember that.
Excellent, yeah. That's great. Right over here.
Mr. Nolan always brings out the best in actors. What's the best note for all the actors? What's the best note you got for Mr. Nolan? And then for Mr. Nolan, the aerial shots were amazing. I heard you use model airplanes. Do you use IMX cameras for that, those shots?
Which question first? Let's do the actors first. What was the best note you got?
I think Chris kind of creates this world around you where you don't have to act too much, and a lot of it is reacting. I think as much as anyone could possibly help you be in a situation, he creates that for you. So I think it's just not overthinking it, and don't think about, you know, acting too much, I think is kind of the best thing. Chris really kind of puts you at ease in terms of, you know, just say what you need to say, kind of don't overthink it. And I think if you're trying to act, you obviously don't want to be kind of overthinking anything. So yeah, I think Chris just creates an environment on set where you feel very, you know, you're not intimidated so much by the scale of everything that's going on behind you. He makes it feel very intimate with you and the camera, and it helps to like not distract you. So I'd say, yeah, that kind of fella, and he's nice.
Come on.
I think I agree with Harry. It's far less, I think, about what Chris actually said to us and more about the way he works. It means that you are just kind of sucked into this world. And I think anyone who's a fan of Chris's films can see that the characters are grounded in such a sense of reality, even when they're so obscure and kind of surreal, that you're able to empathize with them so much easier. And I think that was an amazing thing to be a part of, to be thrown into this world and just be reacting to the situations he was putting in front of us.
Jack, I guess you were told probably just to hold your breath.
I mean, I didn't need to be told that. Well, there was parts of what I got to do, I was saying this earlier, especially when I'd go up in the plane with the IMAX camera on the wing and we'd come back down and show Chris, it very much felt like shooting a short film in a way, that Chris would have a look and then we'd stick more film in the camera and up we'd go and do something again, you know, something different that Chris had thought of, and we'd come back down, he'd have a look. It was basically sort of, technically there was only about three of us there when we were doing that, me, the pilot, and Chris, and that part was a lot of fun, yeah.
Barry, Mark, notes from the director?
I mean, as the lad said there, you know, Chris creates a world for you. I've not been on a film before where you have Spitfires come over you, battleships to your left, right, you know, it's, you don't have to act, I mean, it's fun, it's, you know what I mean? It was more the way the world he created, and it just made it a lot easier.
Yeah, I don't have a memory of lots of notes or talk or micromanagement, which is really tiresome as an actor. I felt very trusted. Sometimes in modern films, the director is 100 yards away in a tent, hopefully not playing on their Game Boy, but watching. But seriously, I have been in films where you're not sure the director's even watched what you're doing. But on the contrary with Chris, he felt very much there with us. And Jack was reminding me that at times he would be rocking the boat behind the camera. You didn't feel him just there physically. You felt him there emotionally with you, and very observant to what was organically happening between the three of us, Tom Glen Carney and I. And his notes were very gentle and never felt like I was being asked to do something other than to try and bring as much as my own humanity as I could in that situation. I mean, you didn't have much choice other than to be close to us on that little boat, but you know what I mean, he was just very personally involved. It's very hard to be a film director, I think, and many film directors have to take jobs and have careers that involve doing things just to get to somewhere else. But you felt Chris wasn't trying to get anywhere else than where we were right on that day, and enjoy that. So that's should be the norm, but it's actually a gift when you get that from a director.
So back to the other question for Chris, and also Emma too, considering that, you know, trying to make this film as realistic as possible. You were using real things, real planes. How did you do all this?
Well, planning, the aerial sequences, it was very important to me that we tried to achieve as much in camera as possible. So we were able to get real Spitfires, real Bomber, real Heinkels, and really try to get the IMAX camera places we'd never got it before, really try and put the audience in the cockpit plane with the pilot. And so there was a lot of attention to detail, a lot of careful planning. We shot all those sequences on IMAX, and overwhelmingly for real, that was the intention. And you know, we got, as Jack was referring to, we bought a Yak airplane that's very similar in size and shape to a Spitfire, but has two cockpits, so we could have a real pilot flying while we had our actor up in the air with a cameraman on the wing getting his close-ups. And that was the kind of thing we really wanted to do, to try and tell this aerial story in a way that we hadn't seen before.
Emma, do you ever say no?
I don't know how to answer that question. I don't say no exactly. I would say I listen to the way Chris wants to do something, and I question whether it's the right way to do it, I would say. I think that's the MO. But I think that, I just wanted to also add to the question of, you know, how we did things for real. Not only, you know, I think that with all of these things, with the Spitfires, with the boats, we have there are a lot of people who are real enthusiasts for this era of history and do a great deal to sort of keep the memory of it alive. And so not only did we have the Spitfires, but we also had some of the real little ships that were basically recreated the journey that they made in 1940. There's a group of very passionate owners of those little ships, and they regularly get together and memorialize the evacuation. And we had some of them come to Dunkirk, which was an incredible thing, and I think that it really helped all of us to sort of tell the story in a very authentic way. Stephen.
For Harry, this is a supporting role, and I assume that your people, your agents or whatever, have given you proposals where, like Elvis or Eminem, you would have made your movie debut in a starring role. Why did you decide this was the way for you to go? And for Christopher, did you, when you were starting out, worry that his celebrity might overshadow the, you know, his co-stars, who were virtually unknown to a mass audience?
I think for me, when I first heard about, you know, Chris making this film, I was kind of already excited to watch it. I think it's something that I would have been excited for had I had absolutely no involvement. And I think other than, you know, the urge to want to get involved in it and try and, you know, do anything to kind of be a part of it, I can't say I really thought too much other than that about it. I think everyone being on Chris's set, he's so passionate about it, and it's so infectious and creates this environment where everyone, cast and crew, I think there's one focus, and it's doing the best for him and doing the best for the film and making it as good as it can possibly be. And I don't think there's really any room to think about anything too personal other than that. I feel like there's kind of, everyone has the same goal, and that's just to do their part for the film, really.
Right over here?
Sure.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I mean, my job as a director is to see the potential in the people we're thinking of casting, and whether you're talking about somebody who's never done a film before, like Finn and Harry, or whether you're talking about somebody very experienced, like Mark Rylance or Ken Branagh, you have to see the potential for them to do something they've never done before. That's really the ideal. You try not to cast people who've done exactly with them, because they won't feel challenged and they won't get anything out of the experience. And so you can't worry too much about previous roles that, you know, Mark has done, or you know, or Harry's celebrity or whatever. I think the audience, when they come to a film, if we all do our job right, they become invested in the world that you've created and they take it on its own terms.
Now over here.
Mr. Nolan, first off, a clarification from one of my fellow journalists. Did you say the cameraman was on the wing of the plane?
No, the camera was mounted.
The camera, okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
My question was, you started off by saying that this story had had mystic levels when you heard about it, you know, as a youth. How did you keep that balance between showing the huge nature of this story and keeping a very human story?
Well, the idea behind the structure of the story and the way in which we've told it is really by virtue of trying to tell it on a very human scale, on a very intimate scale, and create what I refer to as an intimate epic. You're trying to stay in a very, very intimate point of view with each of the story threads, but have them gradually, over the course of the film, build up a cumulative picture of a very, very large event.
Right here?
My question is for Finn and the rest of the guys. What was your awareness of the Dunkirk operation beforehand, and what was your research? Did you go to like some of your older relatives and talk to them about it, or what was your research process, or did you feel you needed to?
Well, I think it's obviously something that you learn at school. I think, like Chris has said, it's told in this very kind of washed over way. It's not. You're often taught about the end of the war, and there was obviously so many events after it. I think it's often looked over in terms of just how pivotal it was, and obviously the events that came afterwards. So I think it was, you know, I think we all feel kind of lucky to be a part of something that gets to tell such an important story in a little more detail than I think it's usually told in.
I think we all knew about Dunkirk because in particular in England, you learn so much about the Second World War growing up, just because it is such a fundamental part of our history and obviously the world's history, but particularly Dunkirk is so integral to how the UK treated the Second World War afterwards. We often talk about the spirit of Dunkirk. I think even if you don't learn that phrase, it's very present in history books and in lessons, that it kind of set the tone for the rest of the Second World War, and it was this coming together of people to get through such a crisis and this community spirit. So I think I knew a bit, but after doing the film, it's just amazing to learn all the little details and the resourcefulness of the men and the extents they went to and the desperateness of the situation, really.
Did y'all do research too, I suppose? Or did you know about it beforehand, Dunkirk?
Yeah, I knew about it, but it depends where you grew up in the UK. I mean, where I grew up in the Scottish Borders, so we learned about the Navy and Scapa Flow up in Orkney and things like that. But it's hard to not be aware of it growing up in the UK.
To be honest, I didn't know a lot about it. There was a lot of lawyers involved, but I didn't know a lot about it. Like, so when I came on board with this film, I learned, and yeah.
There's a museum in London called the Imperial War Museum. And much to my delight, they had a lot of audio recordings with men like Mr. Dawson, who I bet it sounded like you'd listen to them too, because sometimes I saw little details that Chris had taken with his imagination and made into the story of the film. But these were nice 60-minute or 90-minute recordings with these men, and they helped me to understand how little they knew about what they were going towards. The government at the time obviously was keen not to frighten the English people, who'd only just got over the First World War, and didn't want to know how terribly badly things were going in France at that time. So yes, those recordings were very helpful to me.
Right over here.
Two questions for Mr. Nolan. One, this for me really felt like a locker room thriller, so I'm wondering cinematic influences. And then two, this is a game changer for moviegoers because of the IMAX experience. It's like something we've never really seen before. So if you could talk a little bit about the IMAX, shooting almost the whole thing in IMAX, and then going forward, is this the way you're going to be making movies?
Well, I've been working with IMAX for about 10 years now. And with each film, we've tried to maximize our use of it, try and shoot more of the film that way. This film felt more than any other I've made that I needed to try and immerse the audience in the experience and create what I call a sort of cinema of experience, you know, really take them there. And IMAX is the best format to be able to do that. Obviously that poses production challenges, but I think it's well worth it in the finished product. As far as influences, created on film. We looked at a lot of suspense films. I really wanted the film to be driven primarily through the mechanism of suspense, which I think is one of the most cinematic of film forms, most pure cinema. So we looked at Hitchcock, we looked at various influences. I think the one I would point to most is probably Clouzot's Wages of Fear, which I think has a very, very distinct, you know, influence on various aspects of the film. But I like to cast a pretty wide net in terms of films to show the crew before we start. We looked at a lot of different things. You know, we looked at some David Lean films for the treatment of landscape. You know, we looked at Ryan's Daughter, the treatment of the beaches, and that extraordinarily visual film. But I think Wages of Fear was the one that we most sort of honed in on as that language of suspense.
Right over here.
My question is for Harry Styles. So how did you making your debut in a Chris Nolan film is so impressive. How did you prepare for your role, and what did you learn from your fellow cast members?
I think being on a set like this, it's hard to not just be always learning. I feel like being around people that you're a fan of just feels like a privilege. I think you try and soak up as much of that as possible. I think Chris has, like Mark mentioned earlier, Chris has this way of, he's not really controlling you, and I think it gives you a confidence to kind of be as natural as you possibly can. You never feel like you're trying to kind of hit too many notes at the same time. He never has you overthinking stuff. And you know, I've just felt very lucky to be on, you know, the set of a man that I'm personally a fan of his work with, a group of actors who I'm also a fan of their work too. So I just felt very, very grateful to be involved with it.
When you hear these planes, do you all feel like you should duck or something? I mean, just as a kind of.
I thought it was a sound effect like yesterday when we were doing interviews.
You'll never think of planes or anything the same way, I'm sure. Right over here.
The evacuation or miracle of Dunkirk. It evokes something different in everyone. I want to know what it evokes in you, collectively, and why you want to tell the story.
I'll go first so that no one steals my answer. For me, I think what it really is about, when you think of the Dunkirk spirit, when you think about if the story has a particular meaning, I think for me it's about communal heroism as opposed to individual acts of heroism. I think it's about the cumulative effect of small acts of human heroism and what we can achieve together rather than individually.
I would say I think it's very much about communal heroism and how these small acts can obviously lead to, thank you.
Does everyone agree with that? Okay,
yeah.
Good. We'll go on to the next question.
Yes.
Because I think the thing that I love about this story is the fact that it's a reversal of the traditional roles, right? So, you know, normally we're used to watching any film that involves war or the army, you know, they are the heroes and they come in and they save the day. And I think what's incredible about the evacuation is that it was the regular people. It was the ordinary people who came in and completely reversed things and changed the course of history. So that's what's interesting to me.
We're getting tight on time. We've got one question over here and then we'll have one last question. So right here. One question.
Yes, of course. Mr. Nolan, as I'm sitting in the theater and I'm hearing the clock, it's just maddening and exciting at the same time. I was wondering if you played anything to that effect for the actors.
No, not on set. I'm not really a fan of, well, let me put it this way. Our set was complicated enough without trying to introduce the element of playback. But the planning of the relationship between the musical picture started in pre-production before we ever started to shoot anything. And so I had it on headphones sometimes, and I had it with me. The genesis of the track is it's a recording I made of a watch that I own that I gave to Hans, and we started to develop a rhythmic language of how that would build up the score from there to fuse with the picture and create a sense of forward momentum for the whole film.
Last question, Cindy. For Christopher Nolan and Harry, could you talk about physically what was the toughest scene to film? And for Mr. Nolan, what is the one scene that gets you the most in this movie, if you have a favorite?
How was it for you physically?
It's great for me physically. You should answer that one.
It was terrible for me physically. I think the thing was that everyone on set was incredibly aware of how obviously anything, however tough it got for us, it was nothing compared to what was happening. And, you know, I think the focus that we all had to kind of do our jobs to try and be a part of telling the story, there wasn't really any room for personal discomfort or complaining. It's also impossible to complain on a set where your director's going through the exact same thing as you. He's, you know, like Mark said, he's not in a tent, he's in the water with you, he's in the sand with you, he's cold, he's the first one there and the last one to leave. And I think it's, if anyone kind of thought about complaining, they kind of were like, yeah, I might not do that episode, because...
I mean, it's a little bit, sometimes it's a little bit awkward to talk about my own response to the film we've all made, but I would just like to, I mean, I think for me personally, there's a very small moment, the look that's exchanged between Mark's character and Tom Vincani's character at a key moment. And it was something that I overlooked, hadn't even included in the script in terms of the responses that would happen. And Mark had pointed it out to me and very much worked with Tom and with Barry about what would be happening outside the terms of the script, what would be happening between the scenes that I'd actually written. And what that produced was something that you dream of as a director when you bring on great talents like Mark, like Tom, like Barry. You're hoping for moments that you didn't anticipate that actually come to define a particular part of the story, and that's what that is for me.
July 21st is when Dunkirk opens. Any nervousness, anxiety? I mean, do you ever get worried about a film opening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, say that to the microphone.
I've got enough anxiety for him.
Okay. Thank you all for your
time. Thank you so much.
Dunkirk. Love-